Years later, Mike Nichols chose the same music for his film Closer, another film about couples changing partners. I'll bet anything that it was his homage to Sunday Bloody Sunday.
Lloyd Schwartz is classical music editor of the Phoenix and teaches in the Creative Writing MFA program at the University of Massachusetts Boston. He reviewed the new Blu-ray edition of the 1971 film Sunday Bloody Sunday. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Anne Rebaldonato, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, John Myers, John Sheehan, Heidi Simon, Teresa Madden, and Yue-Wei Shaw. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at GatesFoundation.org. From the Cy Sims Foundation, supporter of the Cy Sims School of Business at Yeshiva University at CySimsFoundation.org. And from the Gilchrist Foundation, in support of NPR's commitment to coverage of the arts. This is NPR.
As a result of the Civil War, about one out of every three people in the South were suddenly freed from slavery. Bruce Levine writes about why the Civil War was America's second revolution and how it transformed the South and American politics in his new book, The Fall of the House of Dixie. We'll talk with Levine on the next Fresh Air.
Support comes from Sitka's Fly-In Fish-In, offering year-round oceanfront accommodations near downtown with a full-service bar and restaurant, secure wireless internet, and other amenities. Information is available at flyinfishin.com.
Tonight on 360 North, Climate Change Science. At 8, A Night with Warren Washington looks at the work of one of the nation's leading atmospheric scientists, including his family's African-American history and his being awarded the National Medal of Science. That's followed by two Alaska documentaries, An Arctic Journey in a Changing World at 9, and Arctic Haze at 9:30. It's all tonight on 360 North and 360north.org. Follow 360 North on Facebook and Twitter.
Hello, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon, and I'm Joan Pardis, your host for today's show. We've got a great show with Amanda Compton and Katie Spielberger, who will be talking about the Mudrooms event tomorrow night at 7 p.m. We've got Carter Sample with Bartlett's Tobacco Cessation Program. We'll also be talking with Rory Darling from the Juno Bridge Club and a representative of Big Brothers Big Sisters. It's National Mentoring Month for that organization. Welcome to Juno Afternoon.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Canada, a meeting between the Prime Minister and Native leaders is expected as early as this week, but it won't change the position of Ontario Chief Teresa Spence. She's been on a hunger strike for nearly a month, demanding government action on treaty issues. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
Teresa Spence is looking visibly weaker these days. She stopped eating solid food on December the 11th. Friends and opposition political leaders have expressed concern for her health. She's also become one of the focal points of the Idle No More movement, which has seen rallies, protest marches, and rail and road blockades by First Nations people and their supporters who want the government to honor promises made a year ago on treaty rights and other issues. The movement has spread across Canada and even into the U.S. Recently, a Native group from Atlantic Canada traveled to Ottawa to join Spence. Chief Candace Paul was one of them.
I think with a lot of people, since it's begun, it has been, you know, laid on people's hearts. And I was going myself, and I just felt that I couldn't go myself without bringing other people. And so we organized this bus, and everybody has rallied around.
A procession of politicians has gone to meet with Spence, including former Prime Minister Joe Clark and Paul Martin. Martin described her as an inspiration to Canadians. Meanwhile, without acknowledging Spence's strike or the protest movement, Prime Minister Stephen Harper announced he will meet with First Nations leaders this week. The talks would focus on the treaty relationship and economic development. Many Native leaders are skeptical, saying Harper made promises a year ago and then introduced the omnibus bill in Parliament that threatens treaty rights. And a spokesman for Spence says she will remain on her hunger strike at least until the meeting takes place. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
After the Arapaho School on the Wind River Reservation saw an uptick in math and reading scores in Wyoming State standardized test results this summer, the school has continued to see improvements. Wyoming Public Radio's Rebecca Martinez reports.
This fall, the school met No Child Left Behind's requirement for annual yearly progress for the first time under the Safe Harbor program, and now frequent local assessments are showing steady improvement in math and reading. Last January, Superintendent Jonathan Brock took over Fremont County School District 38, which serves primarily Northern Arapaho students. Many students live below the federal poverty line, but Brock says the school's poor performance had more to do with the fact that teachers had been using several incompatible curricula.
The least influential factor on a student is poverty. The most influential factor on a child's learning is the amount of teacher contact time they have and the amount of instructional and the quality of instruction time they have. That's the research we choose to look at.
Brock says aligning the curriculum and frequently and consistently testing the students has made the difference. He adds that teachers are now encouraged to collaborate on how to approach lessons so students can continue building math and reading proficiency from grade to grade. For National Native News, I'm Rebecca Martinez in Laramie.
A new totem pole will honor Alaska Native students at Fort Lewis College. A raising ceremony will be held next week in Durango, Colorado. The Native American Center is hosting the event to recognize and celebrate the hundreds of Alaska Native students who've earned degrees and others to follow. The center commissioned David Boxley, a Tsimshian man, to carve the pole. Boxley and a Tsimshian dance group will participate in the event. During this week in 2012, Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley signed two executive orders recognizing Indian status for two groups. The Piscataway Indian Nation and the Piscataway Kanoi Tribe became the first state-recognized tribes in Maryland history. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. This is a court-ordered legal notice for Native Americans. The Cobell Indian Trust Settlement is approved. If you believe you might be included in the settlement, you need to file a claim by March 1, 2013 to get a payment. Information is available at the website indiantrust.com. or by calling 1-800-961-6109. That's indiantrust.com or 1-800-961-6109. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon. We're going to do a little bit on weather. Today, it should snow and rain. Tonight, it should rain and snow. And tomorrow, it will be raining and snowing as well, with possible accumulation of 1 to 2 inches. So here in the studio, we have representatives of mudrooms. We have Mark Wheeler and Amanda Compton. So what is mudrooms?
Hi, I'm Amanda. I've gotten plenty of chance to answer this question, so I might deflect to Mark.
Mudrooms is this really amazing event that Amanda helped create. Happens once a month in Juneau during the indoor season. We take a break in the summer. But it's a chance for Juneauites to come and hear stories, get to know your neighbor a little bit better, that person you see passing down the street every day, hear their story. And it's all real people telling real stories live on stage. They have 7 minutes to tell their story, and every month we have 7 people. And it's just a really warm community event. It's a way to get to know Juneau in a way you probably never have had the opportunity to before. And it's always different, always a lot of fun, always just frankly amazing.
So is it like an open mic that people could just raise their hand and say, I want to tell my story?
No, we have a recruitment process. We're always looking for folks to come. There's no screening, though, and we're just looking for everyday Junoites to come and tell their story. So you sign up ahead of time. You can go to our website at www.mudrooms.org and send us an email there. And Amanda's wonderful at working with the guests and getting them prepped. And then we have seven people every time. And then if you're inspired by what you hear, if you come to it, you can sign up for the next one or the month after. We have themes every month. And this month's theme is, remind me, Amanda?
First times. Tomorrow, first times is the theme.
And where is it and what time?
Tomorrow we will be having our January event, which is the second Tuesday of the month. We oscillate between the second Tuesday, second Wednesday, second Tuesday at the Holy Trinity Church. We're actually at McFeeters tomorrow, though. It's our one time during the season where we'll be downstairs in McFeeters in the Theater in the Rough space. It's at 7 o'clock. The building is on 4th and Gold Streets. It costs $7, 100% of our charity. So that means all the time that Mark and me and Alita and Katie Spielberger and Rich Moniak and Tom Cosgrove and Pat Race put into this event is completely donated. We make about $650 every night, and we are giving that to the Imagination Library. So it provides one book a month to every kid who's interested under five. They require matching grants, and so we've been helping them support that, along with K2, who provides us some equipment, and the Rickery, who gives us treats to sell. And tomorrow, if you come, the theme will be first times, and you'll get to hear our host from today, Joan Pardis. Woohoo! Also, Tom Koester will be speaking. Sarah Hannon. Is that how you pronounce it?
Tom Koester.
Koester. Tom Koester, Sarah Hannon, Tom Wagner, Aaron Hansen, KJ Metcalf, and Brandon Howard will be playing and speaking. And music will be by Nicole Church. And then February's event, we are definitely looking for storytellers. The theme is domesticity. You are encouraged not to be scared by that, but just if you have a story about filleting fish, if you have a story
if
about...
If you're a man, it's okay, right?
If you're a man, it's okay. We don't need doily stories. You can do a story on anything you want to, whether it's raising your children, grinding coffee, if you have a specific way you like to make batter for beer-battered halibut. Like, this is your chance to tell us about it. Right now.
Amanda, I have a question.
Yes.
So I've been to Mudrooms, and I am doing a story tomorrow, and I'm petrified. But it's a lovely venue, and it gives you such a great sense of community. And I think this was the brainchild of Alita Buss and you. Is this true? Can you give us a little background about, you know,
Alita
Amanda
and I are the elbow grease behind getting the first event moving.
Mm-hmm.
It's not our brainchild. It was, I used to live in Anchorage, and they had an event called Arctic Entries there. And the people who ran that event had used to live in Baltimore. And there was an event in Baltimore called Stoops. And so they borrowed the format and put it in Anchorage. I went to a couple events in the Anchorage, thought it was great. Moved to Juneau, really enjoyed the community, thought they were ready for a period to, you know, a particular event like this. It seemed like it would be receptive and needed to find a host. And so after meeting Alita, we jived well together, and I thought she'd be a good host. And then we just crossed our fingers, found seven people. This is last November, so over a year ago. And it's grown from there. And then after our first event, Mark came on board to help us with the audio, and we started getting a few other people who had said they'd be interested in helping us do the recruitment and logistics and organizing, and Pat's helped at the website, and Katie's helping us with recruitment, so it's Rich, and so we've got a bunch of people just rolling their sleeves up. So yeah, we all help pretty equally as far as time putting it on, but the format is taken from an event that I saw in Anchorage.
Right. And all the people on your storyboard, which is what you call your board,
right,
have all of them told stories?
We are down to three of us. There is both the host, Alita, and I need to speak, and I'm actually signed up for March. The story, the theme is monsters. So if you have any monsters to talk about in whatever form that may exist for you, I will be speaking in March. Alita, we're working on, and Pat has a story. were trying to work on where he will speak that. So there's three of us. Tom has spoken twice. We have a once per season policy now. So anyone who spoke last season is able to do it again. Mark told a very warming story last season, and we've also heard from Rich Moniak, and Katie Spielberger have all spoken, yes.
Now, Mark's story, I was out of town for Mark's story, but I heard it on, it was archived on your website. You want to talk a little bit about the recording process and how people could hear stories if they can't get to the event, Mark?
Yes, so we record them, thanks to KTOO, we record them digitally, and then the stories also air sometimes on Juno Afternoon as individual stories, and then a full-length format will show once a month at sometime, usually on a Monday at 7 o'clock on the radio here on KTOO. But you can also go to mudrooms.org, and all the former shows are archived there, so you can listen to individual stories from individual performances in the past, and we'll continue to do that as we get more stories. I think some of them are also on KTOO.org's homepage as well.
And we have photos on our website, mudrooms.org, too, so you can see kind of what you're getting into and look at some of the pictures of people on stage, see yourself on stage, stuff like that, crowd photos, stuff like that.
That sounds great. So this is 7 o'clock tomorrow at McPheeters Hall. It's $7. All proceeds go to the Imagination Library. Anything else you guys want to
share?
The
last thing I would want to point out is that it's really an event for all ages. I mean, we have very concert-related music events that are, you know, over 21. We've got the roller derby. We've got things for kids. But you don't even need a babysitter for this. I mean, I'm really impressed by, like, the average, or I guess I should say median age seems to be in, like, the 40s. I mean, it's just, it spans, everyone can come and really enjoy it, I think.
Sounds great. All right. We'll see you there.
We're looking forward to hearing you, Joan, tomorrow night.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you
for being here.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 7th of January, 2013. It was on this day in 1887, the Englishman Thomas Stevens became the first person to circle the world by bicycle, insofar as that's possible. It started in San Francisco, 1884. He bought himself a 50-inch Columbia, taught himself how to ride it, and he set out to the east. There were no highways as such, but he arrived in Boston 103 days later. Biked across Great Britain, through Europe, through the Ottoman Empire, through Turkey, doubled around Afghanistan, India, China, and arrived in Yokohama, Japan. Took a steamer to San Francisco, where the trip had begun, and promptly wrote a book about it called Around the World by Bicycle. Came out in 1887. It's the birthday of the novelist and folklorist Zora Neale Hurston, born in Notasulga, Alabama, 1891. She went off to Howard University, and she came to the attention of the anthropologist Franz Boas, got her a grant to collect folklore and songs and stories from black Southerners, went back to New York, and became part of the Harlem Renaissance, and it was there in just 7 weeks that she wrote her masterpiece, Their Eyes Were Watching God. It came out in 1937. For a time, she was the most prolific, the most famous black woman writer in America. But in the 50s, interest in her work faded away. She lost her money, worked at odd jobs, died in 1960 in a welfare home, was buried in an unmarked grave. It was the novelist Alice Walker who rediscovered her in 1973 and who sparked renewed interest in Hurston's writing. Zora Neale Hurston, who said, "Those who don't got it can't show it. Those that got it can't hide it." It's the birthday of the novelist Nicholson Baker, Rochester, New York, 1957. Went off to the Eastman School of Music to study bassoon, but became a writer instead after he saw his mother laughing uncontrollably at an essay on golf. Nicholson Baker, author of a novel about a single erotic phone conversation between two strangers, the book called Vox, most recent book is The Way the World Works. A collection of essays came out last year. Here's a poem for today by William Stafford, entitled Vocation. This dream the world is having about itself includes a trace on the plains of the Oregon Trail, a groove in the grass. My father showed us all one day while meadowlarks were trying to tell something better about to happen. I dreamed the trace to the mountains over the hills, and there a girl who belonged wherever she was. But then my mother called us back to the car. She was afraid. She always blamed the place, the time, anything my father planned. Now both of my parents, the long line through the plain, the meadowlarks, the sky, the world's whole dream remain. And I hear him say, while I stand between the two, helpless, both of them part of me, your job is to find what the world is trying to be. Vocation, a poem by William Stafford from his collection The Way It Is, published by Grey Wolf Press and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac. Supported by Reputation.com, helping businesses improve their online reputation and reviews. Learn more at Reputation.com. Produced by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Hello, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon on Juno's public radio station, KTOO. I am your host today, Joan Pardis, and I am in the studio with Jeff Brown running the board. Thank you, Jeff. And Carter Sample from Bartlett's Tobacco Cessation Program.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm good, Carter. How are you?
I'm well.
So tell me, what is Bartlett's Tobacco Cessation Program?
All right, so I work out of the hospital, and one of the things we offer is once a week, there's a free class from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. every Tuesday at the Robert B. Valley Building, which is the building right across the main entrance of the hospital. So to help people, you know, quit smoking, it's broken up into essentially four sessions of classes, and you know, just to address different components of quitting and helping people quit. And it's free, and it's rolling admission, so if you miss a class, you can come in a couple weeks later or whatever. But essentially, I mean, for people to enhance their ability to quit, the greatest chance of success is to get some sort of support.
So these classes, they're ongoing, so there's different parts of the class. So is it a monthly class that I should start on the first Tuesday of a month, or is it come in whenever you come in?
Well, I mean, if you can do it that way if you'd like, but people's schedules are so up in the air sometimes that if you miss a class, I don't want anybody to be penalized. I mean, I'm there to help you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, four sessions, I guess, from A to D, essentially, in terms of topics.
Okay.
But you can come in, you know, any Tuesday, and we can get you on something, get you going. Because
okay.
Essentially, you want to start some sort of plan, right? And then a part of that plan, you want to see where your routine, I guess, in terms of your smoking behavior, as well as starting to work out a way to address that mental obsession, that physical obsession as well. So,
what's the success rate of quitting smoking if you go to a class as opposed to just trying to do it on your own?
Well, I know that the success rate, they call it of cold turkey, of just doing it on your own, not having any plan. It's like, hey, I'm just going to quit tomorrow. It's like 5%. I don't have an exact specific statistic, though there's a bunch of them out there. But it's raised exponentially in terms of your chances of quitting. You know, and there's not only my class, but there's, if people aren't comfortable saying going to a class per se, there's the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line, which is 1-800-QUIT-NOW. If they call that number, they'll get some free telephonic counseling as well as about 8 weeks worth of nicotine replacement therapy, which is really important to help somebody deal with that physical withdrawal.
Mm-hmm. So are you talking about the patch? Is that what people use?
So there's like a ton of different things that are out there, but the things that the Quitline offers are the patch as well as the gum. Mm-hmm. And it helps kind of alleviate that physical withdrawal, that acute physical withdrawal people go through you know, getting off smoking or chew or snus or whatever. So
what is that Quitline number?
It's 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
Okay, and what is your number over as far as the stuff going on at Bartlett? What's the number for that?
They can call the Bartlett's main line. I actually don't have the number off the top of my head.
Okay. But you could just Google Bartlett or just look it up. In fact, we'll probably Google it and we'll get it for you by the end of the show. So along with these classes, what else is going on with this program?
Well, I also involve myself heavily in the community in terms of prevention and outreach, engaging healthcare providers to try to intervene on people to have them start thinking about quitting. So when you go to a doctor's office or you're in a hospital, it's a prime opportunity to have that conversation, because 75% of Alaskans actually want to quit, right? And about 50% or so forth every year try to make an attempt within Juneau itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's A, letting people know that there's resources available, and 2, informing them that the most important thing that somebody could do for their health is quit tobacco use. Because, I mean, this is an issue. Like, the industry spends billions of dollars every year to target youth to get hooked to their product. It's the only product, if used as intended, that's legal, that will either kill you, you know, or make you really sick. It's not like alcohol where you can, if you drink it responsibly, you theoretically will be all right. But, I mean, if you just have, you know, half a pack a day or whatever, it'll have negative, disastrous health consequences for you over time or right away.
Were you a smoker?
I was myself. I started when I was like 16 and I quit when I was around 23. So I relate to that, I guess, the peer pressure of being in high school and just the targeting of the industry, the way they display their products. You know, a lot of it's just blatantly geared towards youth. I mean, Camel Joe being the most example, which they had to get rid of. But just the packaging now, these things look like packs of gum. You know, you have a hard time deciphering, is that a pack of gum or is that a nicotine replacement, you know, nicotine product.
So. Right. So tell us about how you quit.
How I quit? I mean, I established some sort of plan, right? And it took me about 7 attempts. But I worked on a plan myself. Did I go to a class myself? No, I did not.
But they might not have been available at that time.
Yeah, well, I was over in the East Coast, and they actually weren't available at that time. Alaska has some of the best services in terms of free tobacco cessation for the population.
Oh, that's great to hear.
In relation to the rest of the country. In terms of what the Center for Disease Control spends, on recommends that the state spend on tobacco prevention, Alaska has the best rate, I guess, percentage-wise. They spend 100% of what's recommended. So there's my class available. If somebody's a CERT beneficiary, they can get direct one-on-one cessation services through CERT. And then there's also the Quitline, which offers about 2 months' worth of free nicotine replacement therapy.
That's great. So here we are with Carter Sample, and if you're interested in any of these programs, you could do that
The Pathways, help paving a way for a tobacco-free life.
But the phone number?
I didn't have it off the top of my head, but it was 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
1-800-QUIT-NOW, and then if you're interested in those classes, you'd go over to Bartlett tomorrow night at 5:30.
Correct.
And then if there's any other questions, you just give Bartlett a call. And also there are services at CERT, which is great to know.
Yeah, there are indeed.
Anything else you'd like to add?
I mean, that covers the litany of it, I guess, if I have other thoughts about things. But, I think in my opinion, it's important that people keep attuned to what's going on. The industry is kind of insidious in its nature, and it's always trying to develop strategies and so forth to get around legislation. And so one of the things I support as a part of the state's tobacco prevention control program is a tobacco smoke-free Alaska, like we have in Juneau, but in terms of you're not allowed to smoke in bars and businesses, but replicated throughout the state. And unfortunately, a lot of communities in the state, it's still you go and it's just a cloud of smoke. And any exposure to secondhand smoke, regardless how minimal, can have a harmful effect on your life. I mean, it claims about 50,000 American lives every year, secondhand smoke onto itself, and then 443,000 people die of tobacco-related diseases in the U.S. every year as well. But the thing is, people, they hear a statistic, and they forget the individual tragedy which occurs. And so each one of those, that statistic represents an individual 440,000 times. And so it's an issue. Unfortunately, you know, it's legal, but working towards ways of preventing and getting children to stop, you know, not start in the first place.
Right, or be exposed to the secondhand
Correct.
Smoke, just educating everybody about the dangers of it and helping them quit. So here it is. It's January 2013, start of a new year.
Exactly.
So if you're ready to crumble up those smokes, which probably they're so expensive, you probably want to smoke that last one, but then maybe call it quits.
Yeah.
So there. Thank you so much, Carter.
Thanks for having
All
me.
All right. Thanks for coming on.
You'll be coughing in your coffin if you smoke. You'll be coughing in your coffin if you smoke. You'll be coughing in your coffin, wheezing pretty often. You'll be coughing in your coffin if you smoke. You'll be hacking as you're packing for your grave. You'll be hacking as you're packing for your grave. You'll be hacking as you're packing. What you may be lacking, you'll be hacking as you're packing for your grave. You'll be coughing in your coffin if you smoke. You'll be coughing in your coffin if you smoke. You'll be coughing in your coffin, wheezing pretty often. You'll be coughing in your coffin if you smoke. You'll be choking as you're croaking, my dear friend. You'll be choking as you're croaking, my dear friend. You'll be choking as you're croaking, and I'm not even joking. You'll be choking as you're croaking, my dear friend. You'll be coughing in your coffin if you smoke. You'll be coughing in your coffin if you smoke. You'll be coughing in your coffin, wheezing pretty often. You'll be coughing in your coffin if you smoke. Why should you give up smoking cigarettes? If you really want the answer, they call it lung cancer. That's why you should stop smoking cigarettes. You'll be coughing in your coffin if you smoke.
Everybody!
You'll be coughing in your coffin if you smoke. You'll be coughing in your coffin, wheezing pretty often. You'll be coughing in your coffin if you smoke.
One more time.
You'll be coughing in your coffin if you smoke. You'll be coughing in your coffin if you smoke. You'll be coughing in your coffin, wheezing pretty often. You'll be coughing in your coffin if you smoke. And that's all the words to this song that I wrote.
Hello there, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. So if you don't want to be coughing in your coffin, I have Carter's number now. So if you're interested in those tobacco classes, it is 796-8920. There's a class starting tomorrow night. So take advantage of these free resources if you'd like. So here we are in the studio with Rory Darling. And Rory is the president of the Juno Bridge Clubs. Welcome, Rory.
Thank you, Joan. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it's great to meet you. So tell me about the Juno Bridge Club.
The Juno Bridge Club is a nonprofit organization, and it's been active in Juno, I think I'm going to go back to the mid-70s. It's been around for quite a long time. And we are affiliated with the American Contract Bridge League, which is a larger organization, but we promote the game of bridge and play it twice a week.
Wow. So how many members do you have?
We have about 40 active members, so that comes and goes. And on any given day or night, we play on Sundays during the day and on Wednesdays at night. We get about 20 to 25 people per session.
Wow, that's a lot. So how many games of bridge is that? How many people do you need to play bridge?
You only need four people to play a game of bridge.
Okay.
And so that's one of the beauties of the game is that it's simple in the sense that you just need a deck of cards and four people.
Mm-hmm.
But we're actually a duplicate bridge club, which actually makes it more of a competition. And so with 24 people, for instance, you have six tables of bridge all going on at the same time, and we all play the same cards. And so at the end of the night, we compare how you did other, you compare your results with other people's, and you come up with a result for the evening, and that's what a duplicate bridge game is.
Oh, that sounds great.
Well, it's a little bit more complicated than just kitchen bridge, and so that's why we're offering introductory classes starting tomorrow night, which is what I'd like to talk about a little bit today, because there are people that want to get involved with bridge, but it's not a simple type of thing, and you really need a class like this to kind of get into it. A lot of people want to approach the game, but it is daunting. It can be difficult.
Okay, so these classes are starting tomorrow night, and they're from 6 to 8, and it's a 9-week course. It takes place at Fireweed, right? The Fireweed place?
That's correct.
And the cost of it is $37, and it includes textbooks. Tell me a little bit about the process of how you learn to play bridge, or
okay,
how it's taught.
Sure. The way it's taught is that we actually use a formal textbook. I think that's the first thing to realize, that if you take this course, you'll actually come away with a useful textbook that you can use as a reference for the future. And so that's the cost of the course is $20 for the instruction. The book is $12, and then there's also a pocket flip chart that summarizes what we teach you for $5. So that's the structure of the course. But there's a textbook with 8 or 9 lessons that we go through once a week. So in advance, you read the chapter. And then Jan Moyer is the instructor. She's done this many times. And she's a good teacher as well, very enthusiastic, and emphasizes the fun aspect of the game. I think that should be said, that you can get serious about this, but we're more interested in introducing people to a fun activity. And Jan goes through a lecture of the topic of the evening, and then during the class we actually play a few hands of cards, which are all structured to illustrate the lesson. And so it's a combination of lecture, interaction, and then actually play some cards.
That sounds great. So while you're in the class, can you go to those bridge games, or do you have to finish a class before you join in on the...
No, you actually have to take some classes before you play. Your question is good, though, in the sense that how do you get to actually start playing once you take classes? What we try and do is we try and organize, we try and encourage social interaction. There's two main reasons, I think, to take up bridge. The first is the social part. Whenever you sit down, even if it's with your friends around your kitchen table, or if you actually go to a bridge club, you're interacting with people, and that's the part that I like the best, is you sit down with people and just chat. In fact, you can play bridge around the world, and it's a good way to sit down with the locals for an evening and have little chats. I've done that myself.
So this you're affiliated with the American Contract Bridge League. So if you were going visiting in Seattle or so, you could find out the local chapter and go play bridge. You could be like the traveling bridge player.
That is correct, and a lot of people do that. In fact, we get cruise ship tourists that do that. But if you're traveling in the U.S. or around the world, there is a website, acbl.org, and you could, they have a directory of clubs. But that's a common thing.
That sounds great.
Yeah,
so you were saying, so that you take a class and then you join this ongoing bridge games on a weekly basis.
Oh, if you'd like to.
No, you don't have to. I'm just saying, but if you want to, there's quite a week bridge games going on.
Absolutely. And what we're trying to do as well is to come up with games that only have beginning players in it. Because when you play against better players, it can be intimidating, and we don't want that to happen. We would like to introduce people to the game and other people that are at the same level, and then we encourage them to get together to test out their skills and get better. And some people progress and actually go to higher levels, higher meaning, more serious about it. And other people just stay informal about it, which is okay, too.
So everybody has a good time, basically. That's the whole point.
Well, that's what we emphasize. There's a mm-hmm. very large industry, actually, that surrounds the game of bridge. There are international tournaments, and there's lots of money spent on the game of bridge. You can take it to whatever level you like, but that's not what we're about locally. We try and make it enjoyable.
Right, but the Juno Bridge Club is all about socializing and having fun and playing the art of the game, is what I hear.
That's correct. We have some very good bridge players in town, actually. And the advantage to that is, if you're a relatively new player, is that you can improve your skill. You always improve your skills at anything by participating with better people. And so if you want to progress up into bridge, this is a good place to start, because there are some good players here. And we have players that go to larger tournaments where people are much more serious about the game.
Right. But if you're interested just to learn the game and or get better at it, if you're a beginner, there is this class that starts tomorrow from 6 to 8. It's $37. For more information, call 957-6972. The class is at Fireweed. And, Rory, is there anything else you want to say?
Well, I wanted to just maybe close with a somewhat humorous vignette about these bridge classes. I have some friends years ago that came to an introductory bridge class as individual people, and they met each other, got married, and named their first child Bridge.
No, that is so great.
There's all sorts of possibilities.
That is great. All right. Well, if you're interested, it's 957-6972. It starts tomorrow at Fireweed from 6 to 8. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Joan.
This is Bird Note. All's quiet on a December morning in a northern Ontario forest. A long, narrow clearing affords a clear view of spruce and birch trees. Then, nervous yelps from a red squirrel interrupt the silence. And, like a silver thunderbolt, a large bird of prey rushes by low to the ground in rapid pursuit of a ruffed grouse. The grouse flaps madly, just eluding its pursuer by winging wildly into a dense thicket. The hunter flies up to perch at the edge of the clearing. It's a northern goshawk, one of the most fearsome and admired of all birds of prey. Silver gray with a bold white slash above its menacing red eye, the elegant goshawk is the largest hawk of the northern forest. Since at least medieval times, falconers have regarded the goshawk as a bird of great distinction. Attila the Hun even wore its image on his helmet. The boreal forest is a vital part of the bird's range. Yet, during lean years, when ruffed grouse and snowshoe hare populations dip, as happens about every 10 years, the scarcity of prey brings northern goshawks south. It's then that we're more likely to see these beautiful and fearsome hunters. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
You are listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host for today, Joan Pardis, and this is KTOO. In the studio, we have Thomas Kramer from Big Brothers Big Sisters.
How you doing?
Hi, Thomas. And a Big Sister volunteer, Rachel Gearhart. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Good. So, Thomas, tell us what's going on at Big Brothers Big Sisters in Juno.
Yes, well, this month is National Mentoring Month, so we are just trying to recruit maybe some people to come and volunteer with us. We have four programs currently in Juno. We have the community program, which is what people usually think about when they're becoming a big. You're allowed to go out and about in the community and go to different match activities we put on, pretty much do anything, go camping after a year and cool stuff like that. And then we have
So in that community match, that's about an hour a week or a minimum?
No, it's 2 to 4 times per week. A couple hours of hanging out, and
oh, cool.
It's a little bit more of a commitment. But if you can't make that, we have the school program, which is just an hour a week at the school, and you just go hang out with them at lunch, recess. They can also attend the match activities put on by Big Brothers Big Sisters, too, so they can enjoy all those things.
Okay.
And then we also have programs in Johnson Youth Center. We match residents in there, and that's actually I match those ones, and that one I really enjoy. Some of those kids don't get any visitors or anything during the holidays, and so to have volunteers who aren't paid to come see them just comes, you know, it really makes a difference. And I'm starting to get pretty soon here a couple more kids coming in so we can have a couple to match. And we also have the SYNC program, which is matching foster youth in foster care.
Oh, wow. So when you talk about youth, what are the ages of these matches?
For the school program, you just have to be in kindergarten, and you can age out whenever you graduate high school. But generally, they age out or transition into the community program around middle school area time. And for community program, you just have to be 6 years old. You age out when you graduate high school. For Johnson Youth Center, you can stay matched till you're 21. It's a little bit longer, and same with SYNC.
Okay. So if someone is interested in being a big brother or big sister and they're a little daunted, what kind of resources, what kind of support does your organization right here give to the big brother and big sister?
Well, we go through a big process. We match them up due to their preferences so that they're matched with somebody that we try to make good matches and get people together that like to do similar things. And we provide them with a match support specialist who will check in with them monthly and give them any advice or anything they need. And we also provide monthly match activities through a lot of donations and grants from people around Juno.
So what would a match activity be like? What would that be?
We go zip lining, whale watching.
Cool.
there's other ones too. There's like at the canvas, we do an art thing sometimes and just different ones throughout the month. Winter comes up. Sometimes we do hike a movie up the glacier, just different things like that.
And, sounds really fun.
Yeah.
And at one point, didn't you have like couple matches? Like,
yeah,
can
yeah,
couples
we still
do that?
Couples can still do that. We definitely love that. Definitely will be taking anybody who would love to do that. We currently have 14 little brothers waiting in the school program, 15 little brothers waiting in the community program, and 7 little sisters in the community program.
Wow. And how can people get a hold of you if they're interested?
Just give us a call at 586-3350.
Okay. And National Mentoring Month, what is that all about? So here it is, January, and it's National Mentoring Month. So throughout the whole nation, Big Brothers Big Sisters is a national organization. Everybody's doing this push to do matches?
Correct, and I believe it's more than Big Brothers Big Sisters, too. I think it goes beyond that.
Okay, being a mentor.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, Rachel, you are a big sister.
I am.
How long have you been doing it?
Here in Juneau, about 2 years.
And so that makes me believe that you were a big sister before?
I've been a big sister in Anchorage when I lived there, and I actually interned as a graduate student, and before that I was a lunch buddy in college, so my experience goes back a few years.
Wow, that's great. So your big sister here, how old is she? Your little sister.
My little sister is 13.
Oh, great. And what kind of things do you guys do?
Well, she told me she had never baked before, so we started out making cookies. We scrapbook the things that we do, so we try and take at least a picture, even if we're just going to get hot chocolate or going on a walk. We try and take a picture so we can commemorate it. And then on those rainy days, which we don't have any here, but on those rainy days when we don't want to get out, then we have a scrapbook indoor activity and we just use stickers and markers and make it something we can look at together later.
That sounds like so much fun. So how often do you see your little?
We try and see each other weekly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes things come up and we don't get to do that, but we try and see each other each week.
Do you have, like, a given day? I'm just wondering how, you know, it works, or do you guys just flow and
pull it out? Being a community volunteer, and I have the normal full-time job, we tend to get together on weekends, Saturday or Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we are flexible with depending on what activities are going on, too. With the match activities, we try and attend those that Big Brothers Big Sisters offers to us for free.
Yeah, who wouldn't? They sound fantastic.
Exactly.
So you've been doing this for a while. I won't ask you your age, but since college. So what drew you there, and what keeps you there? I mean, what is it for you?
I really like being a mentor to somebody without a lot of expectations. I don't have to be perfect. I don't have to be the disciplinarian. I don't have to be the parent. I just get to be the friend. But hopefully my positive influence, you know, plants some seeds somehow.
Right. And your experience in Anchorage and your experience in college obviously were positive because you're still doing it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's kind of addictive.
That's great. Thomas, before you worked at Big Brothers Big Sisters, have you ever been a Big Brother or a Big Sister?
No, I actually just came here
a Big Brother, maybe?
Right out of college, but definitely did a lot of volunteering and mentoring in that way.
Right.
So
and these kids that you talked about, you said there's a bunch of boys, there's some
mm-hmm.
girls. Doesn't seem like there's any school matches available.
Oh, yeah. No, there's 15 or 14 little brothers in the school program waiting. We don't have very many little sisters waiting, but we definitely need we need a big push for big brothers.
And so do you always match boys with boys? I mean, like
boys with boys are little brother can have a big sister.
Mm-hmm.
But a little sister can't have a big brother.
Okay. So these boys that are waiting, a woman, if she'd like to do it, or a couple,
yeah,
can become a big brother, big sister, big couple.
The couples matches don't go in the school program. Those are generally just the community program.
Yeah, that sounds complex. All righty. And then, Rachel, besides all the stuff that you mentioned, what other things do you know, what are the highlights that you think about actually doing with your little sister here? You know, besides building the memories, and it's great that you have a scrapbook, that will be wonderful, which is so easy now with being able to take a picture anywhere.
Oh,
but
yeah.
What are the things that you really enjoy doing with her, or she really enjoys?
We like to try and get out and hike, but, you know, we also find that sometimes it's too buggy or too rainy. So we like doing a variety of activities. But trying to speak to her interests in the very beginning, we wrote out a list of what are some things you'd like to do. And on days where we do get bored or we can't think of something to do, try and bring out that list and, well, maybe we can cross something off today.
Okay.
But also just looking for online calendars about what's going on in Juneau that's free. That's a great resource for us, and it gets us active in our community.
And that's another That's a question that I wanted to ask. So I think some people, I'm not saying they do, but some people might have the idea that, oh, this is going to cost a lot of money. You know, I'm going to have to take them here, there, and everywhere. Mm-hmm. And do you find that true, Rachel?
No. We're encouraged to find things that are free or cheap and just have fun together. She's gone recycling with me when I needed to take my recycling or gone to the grocery with me. And we turn it into a learning experience, you know, which peanut butter is the biggest value. And so we're getting a learning experience out of it while we're having fun and just spending time together.
That sounds great.
And through the matching process also, both parties who are matched are aware of sharing costs and things like that. And that's another reason why match support specialists are there, so to kind of mediate those kinds of things if it does take that direction. So,
right. And when you say sharing costs, what is...
Sharing the cost of the activity. If they go to a movie and there's no movie passes, you know, the little pays for themselves or things like that.
Okay.
But and we do offer tons of deals and discounts to where you don't need to.
Right. And I was a big sister to a girl in the school program.
Cool.
And we ran into each other at Fred Meyer. She's a young woman now. And it was just so funny. She came running over to me and said, "Are you so-and-so?" And I said, "Yes, I am." She says, "I'm Christina." And I was like, "What?"
And in schools, we get them as bigs later, too.
Yeah. So that was really great. In fact, I owe her a phone call. So, Thomas, what's that number where people could reach you?
586-3350.
Okay. And Rachel, is there anything you'd like to add? Do you want to say hi to your little sister? Is she listening?
Hi, Liza. And, you know, if you are hesitant to do it, just give them a call. The match support specialists are really good at answering all your questions and easing your fears. You don't have to be perfect. Just give it a try.
Sounds great. Well, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Hello, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon, and I'm your host, Joan Pardis, here in the KTOO studio. The weather for tonight is snow showers mixed with rain, but maybe up to 2 inches. Tomorrow, snow and rain, hopefully accumulation up to 1 inch. And tomorrow night is mostly cloudy. Sorry about that. Scattered snow showers, lows around 26. So that is the close of today's show. I've been in the studio with Jeff Brown, who's been doing the board. So if the show went great, it's all because of Jeff. And tomorrow, Pat Moore will be sitting in the host chair, and he'll be talking with Shauna Strausser and Boston Christopher about Perseverance Theater's latest production, Betrayal, which I believe starts very soon. Doug Murray will give us details about the heating system at the Juneau Airport, and we'll learn about the school district's budget process with guests Barbara Thurston and Kristen Bartlett. So thank you, Juneau. Have a great afternoon. You've been listening to Juneau Afternoon.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tune to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also online at www.ktoo.org.
Colorado courtroom.